Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. It is good to be back from vacation. As you know, I took some time off last week. I wanted to spend some time with the family. I went out of state and it was beautiful. And I'll get into that a little bit in a moment because it's honestly an interesting tie-in to what's going on in the news right now. But there certainly was no news at all. I certainly had no reason to be here last week. No, I'm just kidding. There was a lot of news, and we're going to try and touch a little bit on it throughout the show in one way or another, whether it's, you know, talking about it now and breaking down some of the stories and how they relate to this week, or talking about it with our guest, who is presidential candidate Hirsch Singh. He's running for the Republican nomination. If you can believe it or not, there is another guy in this, but there's also one who dropped out. I'll explain that in a moment and talk about why Hirsch Singh, you may remember him. He is a former gubernatorial candidate who I had back on a couple years ago, back when I was on the radio. I had him on. And he's going to tell us why he thinks this bid is different, why he thinks he's got a real shot at this thing. We're going to talk about that. So buckle up here. We got a wild ride of news to get to. But going back to my vacation, I was actually in Florida, of all places. And specifically, I was on the west coast of Florida, which has been in the news a lot lately, because of the massive storm surge that part of the state experienced from Hurricane Idalia. And ironically, it was kind of funny because the spot I was staying in is this little known island. And it's funny how I use the term little known. I'll explain that in a second. A little known island off the coast of Florida. It, you know, barely off the coast in quotes. It was basically, you know, there's a bridge. It goes over a couple islands from the mainland. But anyways, right there in a little south of Tampa. And it was kind of funny because I was watching the people back on TV when I got back home, and they were, the meteorologists were saying, here's this little known island. And they said the name of it. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. I never thought I'd hear that on TV. And it's like, well, the storm surge from here and all the way up to Tampa will go, it could be up to 4 feet or to 7 feet. And I was just, wow, it was amazing. But luckily, it was that part of Florida, you know, there was some damage, obviously, some flooding, but nothing too bad, luckily. So that was nice going on that vacation. I ironically got out a couple days before this all went down. Originally, the vacation was supposed to extend it longer, but I didn't have the time when we were planning it. So we ended up coming back a couple days before, and ironically, that worked because the next day, you know, that's when all the flights were getting canceled in anticipation for this storm. So it's kind of funny how that has all transpired. But going to talking more about Hurricane Idalia, obviously made its way through Florida, Georgia, through the Carolinas, now going out to sea. I want to extend my condolences to, well, luckily this storm didn't have too many casualties. They've been pretty low as of right now, as of this recording. But of course, I want to extend the condolences to the families who obviously lost loved ones as a result of this, or had injured or lost personal property. Because as you've seen the pictures on the internet and social media and TV, it's just, the flooding is, although, you know, not as bad as some people might have anticipated, still, you know, ravaging a lot of these communities who were already trying to recover from Ian just last year. And now they have this storm they're having to deal with. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers to everyone who's having to deal with this in Florida, as well as Georgia and the Carolinas. Hopefully everyone can try and get their lives back together as best that they can. But we are definitely thinking of you during this time, as we know it's not easy, but we know you're going to get through it. Because that is the spirit of America, that people are always willing to lend a hand out to another. We learned that here in New Jersey during Hurricane Sandy. That was a big deal, even though it was, I believe, only a Category 1 or 2, but it still did a significant amount of damage to the Jersey Shore that People are still trying to climb out of it to this day. So we know a little bit about that here in New Jersey. So let's keep our thoughts and prayers for them. Now, there's still plenty of news on the political side. Hard to keep track of it all, believe it or not. But we do want to send our thoughts and prayers to someone else in the political world, other than, of course, the people who had to suffer and endure during Hurricane Idalia. And that would be House Minority Leader Steve Scalise. Well, what's going on with him? He's been diagnosed with blood cancer. He made the announcement on Twitter, and he said the good news is, quote, it's treatable, close quote. And he detected it early. It's kind of funny how it went about. He wasn't feeling well for a couple days. Well, this went on for about a week. So he went to a doctor's appointment, got some blood work done. Couldn't really get a good conclusion. So then they tested for blood cancer, and certainly enough, that's what it was. So he ended up getting that taken care of quite early. He actually has already begun treatment for this. And he says he's going to continue his work in the process of all this through the next several months. So definitely want to wish for a speedy recovery there for Steve Scalise. Because again, it doesn't matter what party you are. You still want your leaders to be healthy. So we want to make sure of that. And it's in particular to know about Steve Scalise. This is not the only health challenge he's had. Remember, he was the guy who got shot at that congressional baseball game practice in Virginia back in 2017. So Scalise has been through it. This is a guy who has had to endure a lot, whether it was these personal issues that he's had to deal with or, you know, political problems, of course, being in House leadership, having to deal with a lot of that. So we want to extend our best to the House Majority Leader. We hope he has a speedy, speedy recovery. But he is not the only leader on Capitol Hill who's had a bit of health challenges. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell froze once again at a press conference. He was in Kentucky speaking on Wednesday when all of a sudden he just stopped after being asked about running for re-election in 2026, ironically. He just stopped, just froze there. And the reporter was asking a question, and people thought, all right, he's not long. And then he just started answering and trailed. He stopped for 30 seconds. At that point, an aide had to rush into the situation, and she looked at him. She tried to get him to respond and asked him if he had heard the question. Well, she didn't really get an answer on that. So she said, hey, we need a minute here. She turned to the room, we need a minute. Then McConnell tells her he's all right. He's doing okay. And they resume the news conference. But throughout it, he struggled to hear questions. He needed a lot of repeats. And, you know, he was kind of working his way through answering the questions, but it was still obvious something was going on for the remainder of that. Well, his office, they put out a statement responding to this, and they said he, quote, felt momentarily lightheaded, close quote. So that's what the office is saying. Well, the Capitol position backed that up by putting out a note of his own saying, quote, occasional lightheadedness is not uncommon in concussion recovery and can also be expected as a result of dehydration. Now, in the summertime, dehydration is a very common occurrence. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to have to deal with that. But, you know, given this is the only time we've seen this. If it was just one instance, you'd be like, oh, well. But we had this just weeks ago when a similar instance took place at a presser in Washington. Remember John Thune, one of the big guys over there in the Senate, had to haul him away, essentially, from the podium and then return 20 minutes later. Now, this concussion you keep hearing about, that is referring to a fall McConnell experienced at a fundraiser earlier this year where he hit his head. He was out for several months. Then he came back, and then these instances start happening. And this is leading a group of Senate Republicans who are trying to force the minority leader into a closed-door meeting next week to discuss the matter. Because there's some concerns about whether he can still hold that leadership position and also deal with these health challenges. We're going to have to see how that develops for McConnell, but that would be a remarkable development. And as well as resignation, too. But, again, that may be less likely because of the dynamics there. Because in Kentucky, right now, there is a Democratic governor. And in that state, if McConnell were to resign, he would get replaced by a Democrat. And the Democrats would gain a seat while Republicans would lose one. And then that is going into an election cycle where Republicans are very enthusiastic about their chances for possible pickups and to possibly reclaim the Senate majority. While, of course, Democrats, they'd be all enthused because that would be one seat they wouldn't have to worry about for a while. Of course, we have to look into the rules and see when the election would be held and all that. But again, that is all, it's all very remedial at this point. It's nothing you have to really think about right now. But there is some calls for McConnell to step away. McConnell doesn't seem to be doing that at the moment. We'll have to see, because also it could depend on what happens in the gubernatorial race in Kentucky. That's happening this November. It's very competitive. The Democratic governor there is up for re-election. He is considered a rising star in his party. And also on the other side, you have the Attorney General of the state, Daniel Cameron, who is also seen as an up-and-comer in his party, the Republican Party. So there's a lot riding on that race. It's very tight right now. That race could determine whether McConnell gets out. If Cameron wins the race, maybe we'll start to see more. Maybe we'll start to see more calls from McConnell again. Maybe he'll have more interest in it. If the governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, wins, the Democrat, we'll have to see whether McConnell's going to stick it out. Because, again, he would have to, if he decided not to run for re-election, he would have to stick it out to 2027. Because his seat is not up again until 2026. So we'll be keeping an eye on that and how that all plays into the dynamics of the political environment we live in. Now, I want to go towards that. I want to talk a little bit about this political environment because, as you know, it's partisan. People are, you know, throwing insults, jabs, even trying to take down their political opponents. And Republicans are saying that the justice system is weaponized against them. Well, you know, we have a new development, of course, in the, you know, the Trump trials. That is what Republicans saying. It's all political. There's no actual fact in it or anything at all. That's what they've been alleging, that, you know, they're just overblowing all these charges. And former President Trump has waived his right to appear at an arraignment in the Georgia election trial. This is the fourth indictment that the former president is dealing with. Instead, he is going to enter a guilty plea in a filing in court. So they basically have already written the whole thing up. They've just sent it over there. And he is pleading not guilty to the 13 charges. And one of them is racketeering. That's expected to be a big deal there in Georgia. And he's not the only one who may be doing this. Other defendants in the case are also expected to do the same. Now, why are you saying, why didn't this happen in the other cases in Georgia? Well, there was a reason for that. Because under Georgia law, they are allowed to waive the right. They don't have to be at the arraignment. While in all these other places, it was required for Trump to show up. All Trump had to do was go get booked at the county jail, and that was it. Then he could fly home, and that was the end of it. He paid the bail. That was the whole deal. But in regards to the arraignment, that was not required. And it's not an uncommon occurrence either. A lot of people don't want to actually be there. They'd just rather have the attorneys there or just rather have the judge do the whole thing and not worry about it. Now, it's important to know here, a date still needs to be set for the trial. But October 23rd has been proposed by Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fani Willis. So a lot to watch here, and we're going to have to see how this influences the presidential race, which is leading to what I want to get in the middle of this week. Miami Mayor Francis Suarez is dropping his bid for the GOP presidential nomination. Suarez made the announcement on Twitter, but didn't mention why he's getting out. This comes a week after he failed to make the debate stage in Milwaukee. And being the third Florida Republican in the race, Suarez struggled to gain traction and failed to register at least 1% in several national and state polls. That was the main requirement from the RNC in order to get on that debate stage and to be competitive in this race. And Suarez wasn't able to do it. So, you know, at least some people speculating, hey, maybe he just got out because it just wasn't working out. And we don't know the behind the scenes necessarily on what the donors were like, because as you know, when the donors drop, that's when the candidates drop. When they have no money, it's very difficult to run a campaign unless it's a major grassroots effort. But there is still another low tier candidate who is in this thing, who just got in, and he is basing this whole campaign on grassroots effort. And he's right here in New Jersey. And I'm not talking about former Governor Chris Christie. I'm talking about Hirsch Singh. Now, that name might sound a little familiar to you. You're probably saying, why is that? Well, he has run for several offices in the state. He ran for Congress. He ran for Senate back in 2020. He ran for governor back in 2017. And most recently in 2021. And now he set his sights on the White House. He thinks he's got a real shot at this thing. He's an engineer. He is a son of a very wealthy father who has generated a lot of money for his campaigns in the past. And it comes as there's a lot of skepticism of whether any other candidate can get in this race, given the fact that former President Trump has such a wide margin. Now, a little bit about Hirsch. He's an engineer. He's been in Jersey for a long time. He's a native, and he's been very involved in the grassroots of the Republican Party. Now, given all that, does he have a path here to get to this nomination? Is Hirsch going to be able to get over the finish line? Well, let's ask the man himself. Joining me now is the Republican presidential candidate himself, Hirsch Singh. Hirsch, thanks for coming on.
Always, Joey.
You're currently running for president. What made you decide to run?
Our country is going in the wrong direction, and we need it to go in the right direction. If you look in the GOP database, I'm labeled as a hard Republican. Democrat leaders, even State Senator Sweeney, has labeled me as Trump on steroids, and that's because of my record. I got involved in politics, joining the Young Americans for Liberty. I've been one of the loudest proponents for pro-life advocacy. I've even subpoenaed Big Pharma because of their mail-order abortion pills. I've been one of the strongest fighters of election integrity. I've actually sued all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court to ensure we have election integrity. I've been in the trenches over these last couple of years of political craziness in this country. And we need to really move to this next generation of conservative leadership. We need another MAGA conservative in the presidential arena, and that's why I've entered the race.
Now, as you mentioned, you've had some political experience in the arena. You've been there several times. You've run several campaigns in the past, but it's important to note you did lose all those campaigns. Why is this time different?
In 2020, we had the support of four conservative counties against 17, you could say, Chris Christie-controlled Republican counties. So with four against 17, we were within 1% of winning. And in 2021, when we didn't have the support of a single establishment sector, we got right around 22% plus of the vote. We are very viable. We're very strong. If I was the Republican nominee, that's the type of support that gets you landslide victories. And that's what we're here to deliver for the American people.
As you mentioned, Governor Chris Christie is also from New Jersey. You two are the only candidates who are from the Garden State in this GOP nominating contest. Now, although not a swing state in the general election, you could potentially need it if you are to get the Republican nomination. What would you do for New Jersey as president?
New Jersey is the densest state in this entire country, and it reflects the fact that we have all types of minorities, all types of populations, and it really wants to be represented by someone who cares about helping not only New Jersey, but this country go in the right direction. I think we've had a governor that's not really been doing too many things for everyday Americans. And if I were to be the Republican nominee or in consideration, I think that the Republicans of New Jersey, as well as the entire population, would be very excited to have one of their strong conservative leaders pushing for them. I would make sure that New Jersey continues to shine like the gem that it is.
A big issue for New Jersey voters is the state and local tax deduction. The deduction is currently capped at $10,000 for New Jersey property tax. And as a result of the most recent tax bill signed by former President Trump in 2017, property tax filers can't get more than $10,000 worth of property tax relief. As president, would you reinstate SALT in its entirety the way it was pre-2017?
Well, actually, in the past, I was supportive of doing that. But I've actually, when I become president on day one, I will be putting together a commission to look at removing the personal income tax, because inflation has really run amok and the current administration has really screwed up. Too many people are living either paycheck to paycheck or in debt. And so we need to remove the personal income tax. And so I'll be putting together a commission on day one so we can figure out a method to do that, so that people can keep more of their hard-earned dollars to be able to survive this unstable economic period.
Now I want to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is former President Trump. You previously voted for him twice, and now you're running against him. What's changed? Why are you now running against him?
You always have the establishment having multiple candidates in presidential elections. We've seen that for many years. And in our current scenario, where things are so divisive, we need another MAGA conservative in the presidential arena to ensure that the America First movement doesn't get derailed by just having a mob of people and a weaponization of government just take out one guy and then make everything disappear. So this is for ensuring that the MAGA conservative message is there, is robust, and is guided the correct way.
You call yourself a MAGA conservative, which is a phrase that Trump uses a lot himself. The former president is currently the front runner in this race. What makes you different from Trump?
The main thing that makes me different is that I am very, very good at making sure that whatever I say I'm going to do gets done. I'm very good at making sure I find the right people to get the jobs that need to be done, done. I'm highly confident that being a much more, how would I put it, much more in tune with the way technology is shifting, I'll be able to deliver on things like removing big tech censorship and ensuring that everyday Americans aren't feeling the weight of a runaway government. And that's what I would be able to provide that no one else could.
Let's talk about the facts of this race. There's a lot of more experienced politicians, many more recognizable people in this race than you. Why should GOP voters pick you above all these other choices that they have?
The majority of them do have a track record, but it's a horrible track record. They've either been disloyal to the political establishment or disloyal to President Trump. They flip-flopped on very important things that the American people would look at and say, this person is not someone you could ever trust. And it's really unfortunate. The caliber of individuals that were on the debate stage was very low. My analysis has provided that close to only 12 million people viewed the first debate. That's less than half the number of viewers that watched the first debate in 2016. And it's because of such a low caliber of candidate quality. And so I'm here to ensure that we don't have a situation where everything is a bad choice. I'm very confident once the American people get to hear my message, my voice, get to know me, they'll be very, very excited. I just had my first interview on Fox last week. We're going in the right direction. It's just a matter of time. And we have about 141 days until the first competition in Iowa.
Now, the fact is, though, you are highly underfunded compared to these other candidates. You're virtually unknown nationally, although you have made some waves here in New Jersey. Outside of the Garden State, a lot of people don't really know who you are. How do you overcome this in time, given the timeline of the first caucus being in January and the first primary in New Hampshire shortly afterwards?
I mean, if you go on to Drudge Report and these other news agencies, they're still talking about because Governor DeSantis's campaign is going in the wrong direction. He's even putting it on pause for a couple of days due to some natural disasters, supposedly, over in Florida. And there are talks about Youngkin, the Virginia governor, maybe being another candidate for people to get behind. And that is something where he hasn't even said he would consider it. There's more than enough time. What is necessary is just to make sure you have the right message so that conservatives and people that care about values are on board. And I'm uniquely in a position to have a track record of being on the right side of every issue that the Republican base cares about, which is why I've basically sacrificed everything else to make sure I'm here. And I'm confident that as I get more and more media attention, we will resonate with the people.
So in terms of your strategy, you mentioned media attention. Is there a specific ground game you have? For example, former Governor Chris Christie is mainly focusing on New Hampshire. That's supposed to be his golden egg. That's going to punch his ticket to the nomination. Then you've had people in the past like former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who was mainly aimed at Florida. Is there a state or a group of states in particular that you're honed in order to get the GOP nomination?
We want to win Iowa. We want to win New Hampshire. We want to win South Carolina. We are focused on hitting all the main primary states that start off the Republican nomination. And we are very much so focused that come Super Tuesday, we are a very strong force. There's a lot to do. There's unending amounts of work. But I would say that I have the strongest, best, hardworking team. We are dedicated to making sure America goes in the right direction, and we are going to do this because we can't wait for someone else to save us. The situation is so bad and so dire. We're taking responsibility for our country ourselves.
You're currently not registering in any national polls or any of these state polls at this point. Are you planning on holding any events, any rallies in Iowa, in New Hampshire? You said you want to aim your attention towards all these states. What exact type of voter engagement are you going to be doing there?
Yeah, I've already been in New Hampshire more than once. I've been over in South Carolina. I have historical strength there. And we are going to be, in a systematic way, increasing our presence in all these locations. There is enough time, but it's all about doing things the right way at the right time. And so we are definitely going to have a very, very strong ground game. We're not looking for being in this competition. We're here to make sure that people are confident in our candidacy.
In terms of social media and TV ads, are you going to be doing any of that? Or is it going to be mainly doing interviews like this and engaging with voters on the ground?
This may be my 30th, maybe 20th, 25th or so interview. And remember, this is day like 31, 32 of the campaign. So our trajectory is very positive. As people get to know me, they are fully on board. Whereas social media was a very large part of things in an organic sense, historically, Facebook has completely kind of screwed up the way it allows political pages to be portrayed. There are more barriers to entry to get in front of everyday people than ever before, which is akin to the big tech censorship we were discussing that I will be removing. But at this point in time, we are very much so going to be on TV. We're going to be on radio. We're going to be on social media. It is, you don't go one way. You have to hit everywhere. You have to do it the right way and win the people.
You're about 30 days into this, a little more. But the reality is we got to talk about this. You're facing a number of obstacles in your campaign to seek the GOP nomination, whether it's the polls, the lack of name recognition or funding. You have a former president who has a lead that is a margin of support in the polls that we haven't seen since George Bush in 2000. It begs the question, if you are still where you are now as you get closer to the start of primary season, at what point would you consider dropping out? Is there a point in your mind where you're like, all right, maybe I should just let the other candidates have a shot at this? My time is done.
I think that we are very much so on a trajectory to have a very competitive primary. And I'm also sure that you tend to see more establishment connected candidates to drop out as they see that their path is not there. So long as I have strong support amongst the base, I will continue. And I would only be willing to not run if it was clear that we would have a MAGA conservative candidate whose values and approach was something I believed in that was going to win the nomination. If someone who has the wrong values seems to be there, then I will continue fighting because we cannot allow this country to go in the wrong direction.
If former President Trump he's a guy you've praised on several occasions. If he wins Iowa, he wins New Hampshire, he wins South Carolina, Nevada, all the Super Tuesday states, if it's pretty obvious that he's going to get the nomination at that point, would you drop out?
I think it depends on the situation. We'll have to see. It's hard to speculate this far in advance. We still have plenty of time. There's lots of work that's being done, and we're going to do whatever the American people want.
I want to talk about the debates. Obviously, you didn't make the stage for the first debate, but this isn't the only one that's on the calendar. There's another one in a few weeks. What's the game plan to get on that debate stage for the upcoming debate?
I mean, the majority of candidates that have been in the race, they've been around for about 5-6 months already, if not more. And, you know, Mitt Romney was not in his first debate in 2012. President Trump did not attend this first debate. So, though we're looking at trying to be there, that'd be nice. There's also going to be a third debate. It really doesn't matter. Everyone who was on that debate stage lost the other night. So it really is not the focus. The focus is the competitions that matter. There's going to be many more debates. We're going to be a part of the conversation. We're here to win.
Now, I understand, obviously, that the debate isn't everything, but what is the exact planning? Is it going to be... Is there an effort to try and raise more money? Is it to try and get more polling? Are you going to sign that pledge in order to get on that debate stage of you support whoever the nominee is?
I think that that pledge is something that President Trump himself said he would not sign. So if they have interests in making sure that he attends in the future, which he has currently said he would not, you know, they may have to change that requirement. They also, I believe, from a polling standpoint and otherwise, as you become more of a legitimate campaign, people start including you in polls. I believe it was, you know, multiple months in before some of my opponents were even allowed to be included in some of those polls. So we will be entered into them in a period of time. This is the process. This is the way. And it tends to occur that when you are a new entree into it, people are trying to see, are you serious or are you just doing this for show? And we're here, we're very serious, and it will take a little bit of time, but in a true grassroots fashion, we are going to have a groundswell of support, and we're very confident we're going to be very competitive.
Now, I just want to get some clarity here. If that pledge is not removed for the second debate or any others that come up in the future, you're not going to be on that stage, you won't sign it?
We'll evaluate when we get closer. At this point in time, you know, RNC has to reevaluate what its approach is going to be. President Trump did an interview on X, formerly known as Twitter, with Tucker Carlson. I believe he had over 250 million views, which is more than 10 times the audience that he had in 2016. And so it begs the question, if it's not a viable place to ensure the American people know you're trying to lead them, what part does it really play within the competition for an election? And so we will evaluate everything as we move forward. The goal is to make sure we're representing the American people.
Speaking more broadly here, you're running against a front runner who You once supported, but don't anymore. You've repeatedly criticized biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, his nearest opponents. You have said if Trump gets the nomination, you would support him. If you ultimately lose, will you support the Republican nominee no matter who it is?
No, it depends on who it is. And you have to understand that Mr. Ramaswamy is not a registered Republican even today. He's never voted in a Republican primary in his entire life. By his own admission, he's voted for a pro-abortion candidate in 2004. He is not connected to the base of this party, and he flip-flops on every single issue. And so it's really concerning that he's even being considered a candidate. And Ron DeSantis, Mr. Governor DeSantis, has done a pretty good job, I believe, in Florida, and I've supported him in the past, but his presidential campaign somehow has him saying that he would he took the same position as the Clintons have on abortion, word for word. And that kind of really turned him into a symbol of someone who's flipped. He was supported by President Trump. That's why he succeeded. And now he's being disloyal. So it's clear as day. If you have a true MAGA conservative who is going to be the nominee, I would be supportive. But it depends on who it is.
To be clear, if it's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis or Vivek Ramaswamy, you would not vote for either one of those to be?
I don't see them winning. I just don't see it being possible for them to the trajectory that their campaigns are on is all going south. They've lost the base. They're never getting it back.
Now, I do want to talk about one more thing before we go here. Ramaswamy has vowed to pardon Trump if he gets elected president. You have vowed to do the same. A start date for the January 6th trial was just set this week for March 4th. The former president has called these trials election interference given their proximity to the political primaries that are on the calendar. Do you agree with his assessment?
I mean, it's absolutely election interference. It's the day before Super Tuesday. If you were even trying to make it not look like election interference, you would pick a different day. Also taking into consideration that his lawyers apparently requested lots of additional time to be able to go and get the details that they need. It's just really horrible. There isn't anyone I've spoken to that is on the political left or the political right, Democrat, Republican, Independent, who doesn't see what's going on and feel, whether they agree with it or not, that it's clearly politically motivated to interfere in the election.
Now, if elected, you know, a lot of your competitors, including the former president, they want to clean up the Justice Department. What would that look like under a Hirsch-Singh administration? What would your Justice Department look like?
It would bring integrity back to our election process and systems. A lot of the laws are already there that are supposed to make sure things are done correctly, fairly, and justly, and it's just that they're not being enforced properly. I would unleash the Department of Justice to ensure we have election integrity. I would also end political persecutions of those that were concerned about the way the election was handled in 2020. I would actually completely pardon the political prisoners that were taken into custody in January 6th. Whether they were foolish or not, I think that what they have been suffering is very un-American. We should not have political prisoners in this country, especially when they are trying to just express that they feel that this country is going in the wrong direction. And you see the political left protesting, everything has been okay. And I think that we need it to be one standard of government for all. Any destruction of property from the left or the right should be treated equally. And that's what I would do. The Hirsch-Singh administration will be seen as fair across the spectrum and will make sure that America heals itself and starts going in the right direction.
All right. Well, we'll have to see where your campaign goes. Republican presidential candidate Hirsch-Singh, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Joey. And for anyone listening, Hirschsing.com. That is HirschSingh.com. Check me out. Look into me. God bless.
Well, that about wraps things up for me this week. Thanks so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on Twitter at block underscore Joey. Again, my last name is spelled B-L-O-C-H underscore Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, you're probably listening to this, and it may be your first time, and you're probably saying, oh my God, I love the show, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you got to do. You got to go to that browser of yours. You got to, whether it's on your smartphone, whether it's Safari, whether it's Internet Explorer. Well, actually, you might have a hard time with Internet Explorer. They don't really have that anymore. But you get my drift here. You got to go to that browser. You got to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in. It'll take you right to the podcast page where all the Fox Sports New Jersey podcasts are. You're going to scroll down until you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that, and all the episodes will be there with the newest ones at the top and the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. And before we go, I just have to wish you all a very happy Labor Day. As you know, it's the weekend. It's the end of the summer. For some of you, you might be sad about that because you like the warm weather. For some of you polar bears, our cold weather folks here, you may be excited about this. You may like the fall, the pumpkins, and Halloween, and Thanksgiving. Maybe you're even starting to think about Christmas right now because people love to think about Christmas now. You know, it seems like it starts in July. You know, whether you're looking at QVC or whether you're going into the Walmart, it seems like July, you do the Christmas in July thing, and the Christmas stuff just never goes away. And sometimes in August, again, it depends on the store. Sometimes they flip to Halloween a little bit, and then Christmas makes its way through. But the point is, Labor Day is a big celebration. Definitely enjoy it. Spend the time with the family, the friends, maybe even get a little in the middle in. I don't know. While you're trying to grill those burgers, if you're barbecuing, whether you're spending some time at the beach, going to the Jersey Shore, whether you're in the car, driving to your destination, whether you're sitting by your pool, whatever you plan on doing, definitely make the most of it. Enjoy it, because that's one of the big holidays we have left going into the year before the big fall cycle, big political cycle. We have the state legislative elections coming up. That is only about 2 months away, believe it or not. We're going to have all your coverage right here. And we have the presidential race. There's going to be more drama. Who's getting in? Who's getting out? And there's going to be a lot of news, as we know here. We covered so much this week. So be sure to tune in to In the Middle every week. You get all the updates. We're going to stay on top of all this stuff as we go into this. So stay on top of all the episodes as best as you can. We will keep you covered throughout the year and going into the presidential race. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It has been a pleasure as always. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.